So I'm reproducing my notes from the beginning of Ryan's talk. We're talking about the same thing. So the Stromberg, Gauss, Aslow interpretation of mirror symmetry says that we should try to find a supersymmetric T3 vibration on a Calabi-Yau manifold and then T-dualize along that T3 and thereby produce the mirror. So what I'm going to discuss today is some, some work along these lines was done by Jan and some collaborators who I will remember here, Guerreri, Meeklin, Waldrum, in a paper called FPH02-11102. And then the one I'm mainly talking about is work of Tomasiello from last winter. And I can find the front page, which I can't. Aha. Well, it has a half number. It's not useful.
It's right here. 050248.
Well, that's your second paper. Oh, 0502. I'm sorry.
No.
Your second paper is 0505, right. 0502148. Thank you. Okay. So this is like a journal club. This is not my work. This is other people's work. So, as Brian described, if you apply the Boucher rules and you T-dualize on a single circle, then you get something which is sensible, but in which the previously sort of torus geometry has been replaced with a new periodicity relationship, x plus n y instead of x plus 1. And, I really don't know what this says. The z goes. Did I write it down?
It's
y and z plus 1. Y and z plus 1, yeah. In which you have to modify what happens when you go around in the z direction. And the interpretation of this is that the S1 bundle over the remaining two directions over the surface has a non-trivial topology represented by its first Chern class C1. So the situation in which I want to describe things is a Calabi-Yau manifold with a supersymmetric T3 vibration, and the basis of a supersymmetric T3 vibration is some manifold M, which in general is what's called a homology three-sphere. So it might be something like S3 mod a finite group, but for all practical purposes, we can take M to be S3. It's not really so essential to think about the homology three-sphere. Three-sphere case. And what we want to do is consider the case where H is chosen so that, the circle that we T-dualized on was X, so that X is in the T3 fibers. This is a T3 bundle, has some singular fibers, as I'll describe in a minute. X is in the T3 fiber, and y and z are the base. So then the full t-duality for mirror symmetry, which is going to dualize that t3, is going to perform exactly this kind of operation on the H field that we started out with, the flux that we started out with, and replace that flux by geometry.
But there's a difference, it seems to me. Because in the case that Brian talked about, the push forward from the third cohomology of the total space to the second cohomology of the base is not zero, because the second cohomology of the base is not
right.
Zero.
That's right.
Whereas here,
right. So as I will explain in a minute, we have the correct formulation is second cohomology of the base with twisted coefficients, and those cohomology groups are non-zero. I'll explain why there's some non, why this actually works in this.
So it's that it sounds like it should be important that M is a homology three sphere and not just an S3. Otherwise, how could you?
No, I mean, we'll be able to do this when M is S3. Really? So, yeah. It's all because there are singular fibers in the T3 vibration. So what's the general Stroman-Giroux-Zaslow setup? Well, we assume that X, which is some Calabi-Yau threefold, is chosen so that it's at large radius, and also it's near a so-called large complex structure limit point. And the original Stroman-Giroux-Zaslow derivation assumed that X had a mirror and tried to figure out what the consequences would be for what that mirror was. There are a number of, the mathematician in me wants to call everything a conjecture, so it's all conjectural from a mathematical point of view. But we now understand in a lot of detail through the work of a number of people, Mark Gross, Ilya Zarkov, Weidong Ruan, Dominic Joyce, Christian Haase, among others. We know through a lot of work by a lot of people quite a bit about at least a self-consistent conjectural picture of what these T3 vibrations look like. So the first point is that there's a section for these vibrations. So in other words, there's a way of identifying an origin on the T3 for each of the three tori. There are, of course, singular fibers. So what we should do is remove some bad set from the base. And consider this to actually be a T3 vibration. And then part of the goal in understanding the structure is to understand how to put those things back and what happens when you add them back in. And just from this amount of information, we can kind of classify what the T3 vibration looks like over a base of this kind, at least the topology of such a thing, by looking for a group homomorphism from the fundamental group of the complement of the bad set into SL3Z. Well, the three tori are probably oriented. Maybe if you weren't, if you're worried a little bit about the orientation question, you could do GL3Z, but I think the orientation is okay. You could do SL3Z. And that tells you essentially all the information about monodromy for this T3 vibration. The picture for delta, as is now understood, is topologically described by some codimension 2 graph inside the 3-sphere or the homology 3-sphere, although it's also understood that graph has to be thickened a little bit into some kind of ribbon. But for the topological purposes of today, that difference is inessential. So topologically, it's something like some kind of graph inside the 3-sphere, and what I'm describing is how to patch together the T3 vibration when you go around loops that encircle various legs of this graph. So there's a lot of detail known about what one expects at the generic moduli for the Calabi-Yau for the behavior of this graph, and that would be the subject of a lecture in itself, which I may give at some point during the semester.
Say one more time what that picture is. I'm not sure I follow.
This is the picture of delta, or something homotopically equivalent to delta sitting inside of S3. So when I take a loop in the complement, this map tells me how to patch together the T3 after doing the loop. So only linear transformations on the three-dimensional lattice are allowed. There's no translation allowed. If I allowed a translation, there wouldn't be a section. It's exactly that possibility of allowing a translation which would enable us to have some non-trivial topology down the base. And so, anyway, we'll come to that.
So it's a conjecture that this is the general singularity structure.
It's a conjecture that there is a T3 separation at all.
There's not a single example. This is another conjecture.
There's a,
well, this is another conjecture.
It's a refined conjecture.
Okay. And it's based on, well, sort of what evidence? Looking at, well, examples? Or how?
They're no examples.
Okay.
They're absolutely no examples. So,
why is the one-dimensional?
Pardon?
Why is the one-dimensional?
Okay, so delta is one-dimensional instead of two-dimensional, most likely because of some local examples of special Lagrangian T3 vibrations, actually T1 cross R2 vibrations of C3, which were written down by Dominic Joyce. And Joyce has an argument for why his examples are good local models for generic supersymmetric torus vibrations. And in his local models, you see this kind of thickening. So before he did that work, there were other local models, which were T2 cross R vibrations of C3, which had codimension 2 singular locus, and everyone was sort of assuming that that was the best local model that you could have. But Joyce's work about 3 years ago showed that actually there are less symmetric tori, I mean less symmetric special Lagrangian vibrations, which presumably is what you're supposed to use here.
In principle, it's due to the vanishing of C1, isn't it? I mean, if you have if your X was a symplectic manifold and you have this simply as an integrable system, then there's a sort of stratification by the degeneracy of the fibers. And this has been studied by some Russian mathematician, his name now, Remkov, maybe. And basically, there are certain. Each stratum is an even codimension, and they represent the first one represents the first Chern class, and so on. So in that picture, there's a, you know, in the general symplectic picture, there should be a codimension one degeneracy locus in the base, but because the first Chern class vanishes from a Calabi-Yau, you jump down to codimension two. That's the picture.
Right, but it really is codimension one.
Well, there's Joyce's arguments, I know, yeah,
But I mean, the topology is essentially codimension two. I mean, so the point is that this thing should deformation retract onto some codimension two thing.
Can I think of it as a neighbor for SYZ torus section?
It is.
Especially in the large complex structural limits, I remember Zharkov and his collaborator.
That's right. So it's related to amoeba ideas, and again, I could give that lecture today, but then I won't be able to give a lecture about Thomas Yellow stuff.
But then why do you say there are no examples? Because, I mean, it's easy
There is no compact Calabi-Yau with a special Lagrangian torus vibration that is known to exist. I mean, and that there's not even existence there for such a thing. There are Lagrangian vibrations, but not special Lagrangian.
Yeah, so if I take, for instance, Quintic in the large complex structure limit, and I think that there is a torus action, which is probably just Lagrangian.
When you say in the large complex structure limit, do you mean that you went to the singular Calabi-Yau?
Almost.
Well, if you go, I mean, almost isn't good enough, because there's no torus action when it's almost. I mean, the only time you actually have an action is when you actually got to the singular point. So, it's a problem. I mean, look, the T-duality doesn't make any sense either because there's no isometry, right? The T-duality makes sense on this open set, but it doesn't make sense on the whole Calabi-Yau without some additional discussion. Well, what I want to point out is that a map like Pi, this putative T3 vibration, describes a Loray filtration on cohomology. And the so-called Loray spectral sequence. So I don't want to scare anybody with spectral sequences, but they're going to be important for the discussion that I want to give. So what's the Loray filtration on cohomology? Well, what you do is you look at cycles You consider cycles, say K cycles, or even K chains, whose image under pi has dimension L. So let me call that AKL or something like that. So if I restrict my attention, then the natural differential on K, maybe I should say K cochains support or something like that. I'm a little confused about whether I'm doing homology or cohomology, but if I take the natural differential, then I don't change the image of the support necessarily. And so you get subsets, dimension less than or equal to L. You get natural subsets of cohomology, closed under addition, of the K chains, whose dimension is less than or equal to L. So not every chain, not every cochain, not every representative of that cochain will have dimension less than or equal to L. The statement is simply that there is a way of choosing a representative which has dimension less than or equal to L. So that provides a nice filtration on cohomology anytime you're given a map like this. And it provides a solution to one of the old puzzles that existed before Strom, Dourian, and Zaslow about the meaning of mirror symmetry. So in mirror symmetry, there's this sort of odd fact that the even cohomology has a direct sum as HPP cohomology groups. And on a Calabi-Yau threefold, these HPP cohomology groups are really defined over the integers. So there's a way of taking the HPP cohomology groups and finding an integer structure associated to them. But on the other side, so that was somehow supposed to be analogous to the HPQ of the mirror, and there's no integral structure associated with those. So the first kind of understanding of where this integral structure came from came by identifying these large complex structure limits as places where there was some kind of integral filtration. So there's a filtration of integer cohomology. And excuse me for using the filtration language instead of the direct sum language. The a lot of the natural structures here come as filtrations rather than as sums of integral things, but you can think of this so-called associated graded, the sum of the successive quotients of these things, if you like.
Say one more time what F is, or what's the right-hand side you just pointed to?
This was the cycles whose support was dimension less than or equal to L.
Okay.
So I can I can go from K down to zero and get some kind of filtration on the set of K cycles, K cocycles. So there's a filtration of integer cohomology, which initially was identified by the monodromy behavior near a large complex structure limit point, but under the Strom-Dourian-Zaslow proposal is being identified with this FLHK of X. Why? So I'm going to identify at least the graded pieces. Well, since I'm doing filtrations, I'm going to identify the filtration here with the sum from 0 up to some L on the mirror side, and think that mirror symmetry auto-exchange those things.
I thought that K theory was naturally graded, but naturally filtered, but not graded. Was that?
You thought that K theory
naturally filtered but not graded.
That's probably correct.
I think that's true. There's a natural filtration given by what K theory classes are trivial on the K scale. It just sounds to me. I wonder if maybe K theory is the right thing to be comparing on both sides. Well, in fact, we know that the K theory has to be.
Look,
and maybe you're
So I guess the fact that I put a Z there invites a discussion of whether we should be using homology or K-theory, but let's not have that discussion today. Now, given a filtration on cohomology like this, well, not just given any filtration on cohomology, but there's an associated so-called spectral sequence of the cohomology. And this Larey spectral sequence is associated to any continuous map between topological spaces. And it's a spectral sequence, so I don't know whether people really know. Half of the people in this room certainly know what a spectral sequence is. But it's a spectral sequence which is which has as its E2 term the pth cohomology with coefficients in a so-called local system, which is the qth derived functor of pi lower star of the integer sheaf of integers on the total space. And what does that mean in practice? What that means in practice is that it's a sheaf whose fibers, so this is a sheaf whose fibers are the cohomology of the fiber over pi, over t. So you can imagine is that as t moves around the base, the cohomology of the fibers over t, qth cohomology, may acquire some kind of transformation properties as you move around in the base, and so that it defines potentially a non-trivial sheaf in this way. So what does it mean that this is a spectral sequence? What it means is that there are maps, so-called second differential maps, from HP RQ pi over star Z to HP plus 1 P plus 2 RQ minus 1 pi over star Z. And that if you take the cohomology, so if you take the kernel of D2 mod the image of D2, you get a thing called E3PQ. And then there are going to be maps D3, which raise this one by 3 and lower that one by 2. And if you take the cohomology, you're going to get an E4. And as you can readily see, for a finite dimensional space, after I've done this a few times, I've run out of room for there to be any non-trivial maps. So the mechanics of spectral sequences tell me that there's this infinite collection of maps, but I can see in a case like this that that infinite collection will have to die out after a very short period of time. And eventually I end up with this thing called infinity PQ, which is the limit of that process. And the...
What did the 2 say again? What the 2 stands for?
The 2 stands for where this, where the differential goes. So I can actually, I can start one level earlier with chains. With coefficients in that sheaf. And the D1 is the ordinary differential, which takes chains and does not lower the degree. So when I take the cohomology of this guy with respect to D1, I get the E2. And then there's this very beautiful homological algebra construction for this thing D2. And then out of the D2, there's a D3 and so on. Right? So you needed some additional structure. Well, I also don't have time to give a full course of spectral sequences this afternoon. When you finish doing this, you get this kind of infinity PQ, and people often write it with this kind of implication arrow to explain what the cohomology is that you get in the limit. And what this converges to is a filtration on the full cohomology of the total space. So the cohomology of the total space is arranged in these E infinity PQ pieces. And there's a filtration on HP plus QXZ whose associated graded pieces are this E infinity PQ. So it's a way
often of calculating what happens to the cohomology of the total space in terms of some kind of approximations that you can calculate rather directly. The filtration on cohomology that you get out of the Luray spectral sequence is this Luray filtration that I mentioned, the one where things are filtered by the dimension of the image of the cycles. So, so out of that data of a T3 vibration, I get this kind of structure on cohomology, I get the filtration, together with a hint about how to calculate the pieces of the filtration directly as HP with values in some R cubed pi lower star. Now, the technically tricky part about doing that in this case is sort of understanding what happens near the singular fibers. So the conjectural picture that we have of singular fibers helps us to make some guesses about what's going on there. And the guess is that the behavior is the simplest thing consistent with the monodromy. So there's no extra contribution to R cubed pi lower star from something that's happening at that singular fiber. Everything is kind of inferred from the monodromy behavior. So that's one thing which I'm going to kind of assume. And certainly, so Mark Gross proved that for the types of singular fibers that we believe to be the singular fibers in these vibrations, that property holds. Then you can ask for a Calabi-Yau where this sequence, where you get to stop doing this sequence, infinite sequence of D2, D3. So let me draw this more precisely for a Calabi-Yau. Let's see. So I'm going to have H0 of the R0 piece. I put P's in this direction and Q's in this direction. That's the conventional thing to do. And this H0 of Z. And now I increase P, so I have H1 with coefficients in. This is, excuse me, this is of a base, right? So H1 of the base with coefficients in Z, H2 of the base with coefficients in Z, and H3 of the base with coefficients in Z. So these might have torsion because of the homology three-sphere business, but let me actually take the three-sphere case where they don't have torsion just to make it a little easier to talk about what's going on. So I'll get zeros there just due to the cohomology of a three-sphere with coefficients in Z.
But you really mean the S3 and not the S3 minus delta.
I really mean the S3. So this works not just for a vibration, but for an arbitrary continuous map.
And we drop the H field.
Pardon?
And we disregard the H field.
There's no H field yet.
And that would resurrect this term.
Well, look, right now I'm talking about geometry, right? So there's no H field. Sorry, I had an H field over here to remind us what was going on, but it's gone for the moment. Now I start getting actually local systems. So R1 pi lower star to Z may be some non-trivial local system, and there can be a non-trivial answer here. And similarly for H2, which is here, at H0, sorry. H0, so the question is whether there's a global element of H1 that's invariant under all the monodromy, and the answer is no. And the question is whether there's a global element of H2 invariant under all the monodromy, and the answer is no. If so, you would actually have a U1 or a U1 squared isometry of the Calabi-Yau, but then you would get an associated element of H1 or H2 of the Calabi-Yau, right? Calabi-Yau meaning that the holonomy is contained in SU3, and so then you get to fill in these spots. So but that's all consistent. Here I get H3M, R3 pi lower star Z. Okay, sorry. So here's where it starts to get interesting. H1.
On top again goes H0, right?
This is H0, thank you. R1 pi lower star. And this is H1 R2 pi lower star. Something like that. This is This is zero for some reason I don't remember. This is going to be a nice Z. Here I have two non-trivial things. Actually, maybe these aren't zero. Anyway, we can continue to fill in this diagram. So, because I have a section, I don't actually have any of this non-trivial shifting of the three torus. But if I had a non-trivial shifting of the three torus, so if I were doing a slightly more general kind of T3 vibration, where I had allowed that kind of thing, then that would actually show up in this D2. So the D2, the interesting parts of D2 are these two maps here, and the D2 map is actually sort of dotting with the first turn class of the corresponding bundle. So in some natural way, that dotting with the first turn class of the corresponding bundle increases the degree of the cohomology on the base by 2, and it actually decreases which fiber thing we're doing by 1. So that's going to map H, P, RQ, pilo, or star Z into H, P plus 2, RQ minus 1, pilo, or star Z. And my geometric interpretation of that as being, as measuring the twisting in the of the bundle over various two cycles in the base, since that's not happening because there's a section, these maps have to be zero. So D2 equals zero corresponds to...
I see how the P can increase by 2 because the first turn class has degree 2 on the base.
Right.
But why is the Q going down by 1?
So I was going to do an example before I did the big story, which I forgot about. So let's do this for a familiar case, which is C3 mod Zn, which has a hot vibration down to S2. And the first turn class of the bundle is essentially n times the generator. So if I do the spectral sequence in this case, then I have H naught of R0 pi over star Z, that's just a Z term. I have H1 of Z, which is 0. I have H2 of R0 pi over star Z, which is a Z term. And then I have my interesting one, which is H1 R1 pi over star Z, which is another Z. Then 0 and a Z. So the D2 map that I'm talking about is this map here, and I didn't work this out, but it's you have to realize the first turn class as somehow lifted to a connection with values in the total space of the bundle, and maybe you contract with that or something like that. Do you remember how this goes? Why this is dotting with C1 in some sense. Anyway, this is the map D2.
It sounds a little bit like the Giessen sequence.
Pardon?
It sounds a little bit like the Giessen
sequence. Yeah, I guess it's a Giessen sequence.
Let's see. The way you change things in the fiber is by push forward and pull back. Well, push forward, actually. It's integration along the fiber. Oh, maybe that's it. Is it wedging with C1 and integrating
along the fiber? I think that's probably right. But I have to be careful to integrate along one of the S1s or something like that, right? It's a little tricky to interpret it that way over here. Sorry, I didn't prepare that part well enough. But here, this is multiplication by n.
But anyway, D2 is 0 because H is 0. Is that the...
Well, in this case, I mean, in the hot vibration case, D2 is multiplication by n, right? And so the kernel and co-kernel, so that's the E2 term. The E3 term, I replace this by kernel and co-kernel. And so the kernel is 0, but the co-kernel is Z mod n. So that's how I end up with Z mod n in the homology of the quotient.
Of the Lens space.
Of the Lens space. I'm missing kernel mod image.
We're supposed to have another quotient piece, right?
No. Just H, no. H1, H upper 1 is 0. H upper 2 is the n.
Oh, yeah.
So it's perfect.
Okay.
H upper 3 is
0. Right. So here we're just doing that in a family, roughly speaking. And the fact that we have no interesting bundles over any two cycles in the base is reflected in the vanishing of this second differential. So I get this very kind of nice picture that the graded pieces of the Lorentz filtration are given by these HPs, RQ pi over star Z. And in fact, what does mirror symmetry do to the topology? Mirror symmetry takes Q to 3 minus Q. And it replaces this with HP of R 3 minus Q pi over star Z. So this is an integral thing which is kind of like the splitting into the integer HPP groups on the even cohomology side. Works very nicely for the odd cohomology as well, and gives you an answer like this. Okay, well, we've already started to see a hint of what the incorporation of an H and this T-duality into this T-duality is going to do. So if I've allowed the, yeah, so let me do it the way Tomasello does it in this order. So now we add H. So he doesn't do it quite in this form, but I'd like to now advocate that we should think about replacing D by D plus H, right? This is what we do when there's a non-zero H. And what does that do to this E2 term in the spectral sequence? Well, the E2 term was calculated using only D, as it were, and what I haven't accounted for is the H. So I want to make a kind of analogy of the Calabi-Yau with a trivial D2 term. Now that I've turned on H, I want to say that the analog of the D2 term, well, should be the map given by wedging with H. And that, of course, well, where exactly it takes me depends on the Lorentz filtration property of the H that I'm using. So let's assume that H is in the dimension less than or equal to 2 filtered piece of the third cohomology of X.
What does it mean legwise?
Pardon?
Legwise.
It means the image in the base is dimension 2, and so one leg is in the fiber.
And why it is called filtration rather than area sum?
Because there could be other representatives of the cohomology class which don't have that property. So what I'm saying is that I'm taking an H which has a representative in the cohomology class with only one leg in the fiber.
Also, it has at least one leg.
Yeah, I've just realized that's a problem, isn't it? I want exactly one leg in the fiber. I'm going to be in trouble if I don't have exactly one leg in the fiber. Well, when I'm doing these E2PQs, I'm really looking at the graded piece. So I'm actually only looking at the component which has one leg in the fiber. So what's going to happen if there's one leg in the fiber? Well, this guy was HP on the base with an R Q pi over star, right? So with two legs on the base, I should increase this by 2, and then I should increase this guy by 1.
Okay, that does not look like what I have written down before.
So let's see, that's going to the next third diagonal up.
So I plus two. That's going to the third diagonal up. So instead of so previously third diagonal over, right? So previously I the total p plus q went to p plus q plus one, but now p plus q is going to p plus q plus three. Oh, that makes sense. I just wedged with a three-form, right? That's exactly what it's supposed to be doing. Okay, so what is that supposed to be mirrored to? Well, on the mirror, I would be taking HPR, so Q is 3 minus Q hat. Yeah, let me call it HP hat. R 3 minus Q hat, pi over star Z, goes to H, P hat plus 2 R 3 minus Q hat plus 1 pi log star Z. So under this mirror proposal, which said, where was it? Which said that Q is supposed to be replaced by 3 minus Q. Now I get my so the sum of the
are we supposed to take this on top of the usual differential, so now differential has mixed grading?
I don't know how to fully do this. I'm only going to be able to do a part of the story, and then I'm going to leave it as an open problem for the audience.
I'm
willing to help.
David, maybe you mean the Q hat. You want to put Q hat plus 1 in parentheses, so that you're trying to get it to go down, right, in the mirror?
Right. So
you're trying to get the translation on a diagonal.
So PQ on X corresponds to P hat 3 minus P comma 3 minus Q on Y, right? So the corresponding group on Y that this is supposed to correspond to is HP, so let me put a Y there, HP R 3 minus Q pi lower star Z, and that's supposed to go to HP plus 2 R 3 minus Q plus 1 pi lower star Z. Right, so the sum of the indices here, P plus 3 minus Q, goes to P plus 3 minus Q. Doing something silly with my indices. P plus Q, I'm claiming, is going to go to P plus Q plus 1. So I'll try one more time. So my claim, which I think is justified by this direct application of the Boucher formula, is that on one space we might have had a non-trivial first turn class of the bundle over various circles, which is represented by the existence of a differential d2, and that the mirror of that statement, it, when acting on the E2 term in the spectral sequence, is the wedging with the H. So somehow I got the indices confused, but I worked it out carefully before the lecture, and then maybe I can do it again in a few minutes when I'm calmer.
You mean 3 minus Q minus 1?
3 minus Q minus 1. 3 minus Q plus 1. Yes. Thank you. So then P plus 3 minus Q goes to P plus 3 minus Q minus plus 1.
Right.
So the picture seems to be this, that if you start with a Calabi-Yau, which, since it's a Calabi-Yau, was supposed to have D2 0, and you turn on an H field with exactly one leg on the fiber. By the way, it works, I should say, kind of to preface this, that it works fine if there are no legs on the fiber. So if you take an H with no legs on the fiber, then before doing T-duality, you wedge with H to represent that. After doing T-duality, you wedge with H to represent that. H didn't change. It's some, you know, you have some flux on the base of the fibration. Fine. One leg on the fiber, wedging with H, which is the way we're supposed to modify the differential describing the geometry, is mirror, apparently, to the D2 term in the Lorentz spectral sequence with respect to the vibration. I don't know how to go beyond that. To go beyond that, in the next term down, so the first term with no legs on the fiber, I increased the degree by 3, and I accounted for that by wedging with a 3 form. The second case, with one leg in the fiber, I increased the degree by 1, which is exactly what I'm expecting differentials in my spectral sequence to do. So those two things can be combined. You can have an H with at most one leg on the fiber, wedge with that, and some non-trivial D2, and you would expect that D2 to get swapped with the one leg on the fiber component of the H when you do mirror symmetry. The next step is very confusing, because in the next step, I want to map in this E2 term, which instead of increasing the filtration, decreases the filtration. And I don't know any natural geometric way to do that. And even worse is all three legs in the fiber, which is the case that completely confuses us in physics, where I want, I mean, I can sort of imagine that it's some kind of adjoint of increasing by one, right? Decreasing by one, I can sort of vaguely imagine that I could do something, but decreasing by three seems very hard. So now I guess there are these questions about, do these have SU3 structures and how can we interpret the SU3 structures? And I don't quite know exactly how to relate this picture to the SU3 structures. So this can also be an exercise for the audience. The extension from D to D plus H makes sense. And here what's being proposed is that we should try to understand how the D plus H operator works with respect to the Lorentz spectral sequence. But it's going to generate some object which is not exactly a spectral sequence, because we're allowing maps which change the degree by more than just one. That's natural, because I started with something, a D, which was not just graded at degree one, but it had this degree one and degree three pieces to it. So I don't really quite know the right structure for saying this, nor do I know how to do it when there's more than one leg. Anyway, this is sort of where this is.
But surely that's not what Tomasiello actually said in his paper.
More or less. I mean, he said a lot of other stuff about the singular fibers, but they're not relevant to the rest of the argument. I mean,
so his paper suggested that one should take a D plus H differential?
No. Sorry. I've embellished a little what he said. Okay. But he looks at the Lorentz spectral sequence and the remark that that you detect the mirror by looking at the D2 in this Lorentz spectral sequence is what's in his paper.
Of course, in the Thiele-Hertzberg spectral sequence for the K theory, twisted K theory,
yeah,
the differential is square 3 plus H. So it's very reminiscent.
Right.
Is what? Say it one more time.
It's something called square 3 plus H, where square 3 is a certain topological operation. So the analogy is that there's a spectral sequence that calculates K theory instead of cohomology of vibration. Well, not even in a vibration, but any filtration. There's a spectral sequence
for any generalized cohomology theory, you can do the same.
And the differential is square 3. And when you add an H flux, it's square 3 plus H. And that's the differential in the E2 term. So that's an analogy. Moreover, I think we really do expect the K theory of a Calabi-Yau. I isomorphic to the K theory opposite grading of this term on the nose.
Right.
And there you have integral structures on both sides.
I mean, if I were doing this in K theory.
And not only that, you have a bilinear, an integral value bilinear and form is natural in K theory.
Right.
So I'm not sure if that's, you know, if we should be doing that or that there's that and this picture. There's a, you know, both a K theory murder story and a cohomology murder story. So I would say the K naught of X is, should be isomorphic to K1 of Y, where X and Y are pairs.
Where one of them is twisted, right? Something like K
naught
of X.
Oh, sorry, in general, yeah, no. That was without twisting. So now with twisting.
Right, I mean,
yeah. Now I mean, with twisting, we need a circle bundle.
Twisting with some non-trivial D2, which represents,
pardon?
Some non-trivial D2 in the Lorentz spectral sequence, which represents the non-triviality of the bundle, and we should allow both of those together. If I do K theory, don't I? Aren't I going to lose some information about? Maybe not. So, in a way, the Boucher computation explains what to do at the level of differential forms, right? And that should be, that should work for either the K-theory or the cohomology setup. And I think this little observation sort of indicates what the role of adding H is when you look at the low-ray spectral sequence, and how the a T-dualizing an H with one length on a fiber turns you into a different bundle structure.
I guess you're what you're really doing is somehow
trying to write a Lorentz spectral sequence for twisted cohomology. I mean, the right kind of cohomology in the presence of H flux is twisted cohomology. Just forget about the vibration structure.
Right.
Just on space time, we have.
Right.
You should, the Rolland-Ramond fields are closed under D plus H.
Right.
We should classify their fluxes by twisted cohomology.
Right.
So, I guess what you're saying is there should be a Lorentz, a T-duality invariant Lorentz spectral sequence for twisted cohomology.
I mean, one thing that slightly confuses me about this setup is, right, I took D cohomology and then I took wedge H cohomology. And if I were to be applying the D plus H operator to this direct sum of all the cycles, which is what you're supposed to do for Ramond-Ramond, I think I might get a different answer. So there's something a little fishy about the way it's going right now.
I guess
now.
I'm being pretty sloppy about that. I've always thought that if I wanted to calculate D plus H cohomology, I could first take the cohomology with respect to D and then consider wedging with H as a differential on the Dirac cohomology.
The manifold is full, but it's okay. So for a Kähler manifold, it's okay.
Uh-huh.
For a Lie group, whatever. But if you get things like nil manifolds, then that's not true.
Oh, really, that's false, I say.
So there's no even spectral sequence for
me? Yeah, it'll have higher differentials.
Nigel, what's it? Can you give me a simple example?
About
see that that's wrong?
Well, the simplest.
The nil manifold sounded pretty
simplest, and then, yeah, there's a three dimensional nil manifold. I don't know whether that's big enough to mention to see that.
Probably need four dimensions to see it. Because you want D of a three form to be H wedge or one form.
Okay. You want D of a three form?
H.
Well, I could take diva 2 form to VH wedge a 0 form, but I don't think any, I think the 0 form has to be closed in that case. So I think the 1 form is the first time you can see it.
Yeah, I'm cooking up examples, but we usually start with the idea of actually a principal server bundle over a torus, right? I mean, so the typical examples of nil manifolds are take a two-dimensional torus and look at server bundles, total space of server bundles. That might be too low a dimension for this, but then you can maybe take some problems.
Let's see, what do we want to find? We want to find a D plus H closed class that we really need to, as you said, the 3 form, so it's
right.
So DC 3 plus.
Right, so that when you apply it.
DF 3 plus HF 1 equals 0.
Right.
Where we would miss it because.
Because it's not closed.
Because the F 3 is not closed.
Right. Yeah.
But as I say, for a Kähler manifold, they're all four. So if you're going to do.
But for an SU 3. Case, maybe not.
Okay, we're just thinking of, okay, that's, yeah, that's good for me.
Oh, I see, because of an SU3 structure, it's no longer Kähler.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are,
okay, that's good. So the twisted cohomology is not just.
So I probably need, I mean, we probably need something.
I mean, one is always a subgroup of the other, obviously, right? I mean, if I take the cohomology and then take the H as a differential of a Durham cohomology, then I get a group, which I guess injects into the twisted cohomology. Put more simply, if I have a closed form omega, such that edge wedge omega is.
Yeah, I mean, we have to.
It's cohomologically trivial. Then I think that will be a twisted cohomology. Oh. Damn, it might be in the image.
Right.
It might be something, it might get killed by it.
Okay. Actually, when you talk about an SU3 manifold, you mean, and how much integrability do you have?
Oh, I don't know.
SU3
half flat.
I mean, these guys proposed that the mirrors should be half flat.
Half flat. So the question is, it's half flat. So yeah, that's a good question. It's half flat. Probably not.
What does formal mean? Is that one of
them? Yeah. Well, it basically it means that you can extract out of the cohomology the rational homotopy groups. So I mean. In general, the exterior algebra contains more topological information about the manifold than just the cohomology. There are these things called massive products. But a formal manifold is one where you can read off in some manner from the cohomology these things like the homotopy groups, density of rational numbers. And there's this miracle almost that it works for Kähler manifold, any Kähler manifold.
All the higher products are zero.
But if you take a symplectic manifold, then there are various counterexamples of formality there. And there's a similar question about symplectic manifolds with the Lefschetz property. So for a Kähler manifold, you have these two things. You have the formality, and you also have this Lefschetz property. But it turns out that just for pure symplectic, they're different. So there's this whole question about whether these generalized complex manifolds are formal or not. In the case of in general, they're not. But if you put in, if you have one of these things called a generalized Kähler structure, then they actually are. This is something that particular students prove. So it relates to this issue.
I'm sorry. So generalized Kähler is formal.
Yeah. So Gualtieri has a paper on the archive with a Hodge decomposition, which sort of works.
I see.
Well, I think that's. But I should say that's. I think that's in the case where you don't have a 3-form. It's not what's called twisted generalized Kähler. So the 3-form is exact.
Well, that's fine. When we're looking here, the mirror should be half flat without a 3-form. So.
No, but the more general case. I mean,
yeah, okay.
You allow the H and the D2 at the same time, right? And they just get switched.
That's right. But let's start with the simple case. Let me ask another question. I mean, the maybe another way to approach this is there an SYZ picture of SU3 structure now?
In principle.
Is that known? Or?
I mean, the main reason to believe that the SYZ structure exists is because we have these large complex structure limits and mirror pairs and an interpretation of deep brains on both sides. Right? So if you believe that there's, well, I haven't thought this through in the SU3 case, but if you believe that there's a mirror pair, and you try to think about where, you know, the moduli space of D-brains, can you replicate the argument? I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. But I mean, there are Calabi-Yau's that have no mirrors, right? And so the SYZ argument can't and doesn't work in the absence of a mirror. Well, you can ask whether there's a generalized complex, a generalized Calabi-Yau with just a mirror.
Yeah, that's another interesting question. More questions?
Time for cookies.
So let's thank David for the And we meet again next Thursday, and then at 11 in the auditorium, and then Nigel will tell us about variation, varying his function.